for the end zone. And Jefferson, touchdown Minnesota.
There is McCaffrey, right side, breaks the tackle. Good shot. Ooh, gets it.
Good evening, football DFS fans. Welcome back to another edition of the Touchdowns for Dough show. How aesthetically pleasing does this look, having four boxes on the screen? Because Mark's turned up for once. Mark's turned up. And we've got Jack, me as ever present this season. And we have Mr. Ben Isaac. International best-selling author. What a privilege to have you on the show, sir.
Oh, well, what a privilege to be invited. And I feel like we're red zone quad boxing it. It does look really neat. I think you've got to make sure that there's four of you every single week now, because that's the only way you can match this level of optical quality.
Yeah, it does feel optimal. This quad box thing that we've got going on. Jack, Ben, you were both at the game on Sunday, weren't you?
Yeah, Ben probably remembers more of it than me.
Yeah, I was sober, and Jack was a few in when I saw him like an hour and a half before kickoff.
Yeah, I'd had a few Guinnesses by that point.
And you were drinking in the street. That doesn't mark him out as unusual outside an NFL game. You know, it's not like, oh, look at that guy. That guy had a beverage. I mean, is this appropriate? So he was not misbehaving, quite the opposite. I think he might have felt that I was misbehaving because I didn't see him and Matt and Murph, and I walked past them. And then I got an angry call from Murph, who somehow has my phone number, which that was a surprise. I'd given it to him at some point in the past. I must have done a show with him and I'd given him my number. But I'm there literally almost at the media entrance of the stadium. My phone is ringing. I've got headphones on, so it's ringing in my ears. I'm like, what? You know, like, Murph? The first thing is like, how did this guy get my number? The second thing is, what's this going to be about? And I thought, well, I'll answer it. You know, I'll do him that. I'll do him that solid. He's a good guy. And he was basically like, I can't believe you just walked past us. You just walked past us and ignored us. And I'm like, what? Where? And then I could hear. And I'm like, right, wait there. Let me find you. And I came and said, lads, he's coming back. And there I was. A minute or so later to say hello. And then as soon as I started to say hello, I was asked to take pictures by a group of Americans. So, like, okay, a little interruption here. Let me take these family photos, and being the pro I am, I'm getting a whole load of photos. I'm getting different angles. I'm getting this absolutely spot on. And then finally it's like, okay, now I can chat with you guys and be envious, because you look like you'd already had a fantastic morning and I'd just been kind of rushing around. You know, Jack's day had started early. He'd had breakfast with Liz, and I'd had a message from Liz in the morning saying, oh, I think I prefer Wembley, taking pictures of Tottenham Stadium completely empty. I think she was like the first one in there. I think the cleaners were probably like, what are you doing here? We're not even open yet. I think she must have had to sneak in. She was there so early. She was there like about 4 hours before I was. So yeah, Sunday was good. Basically, you didn't ask me, but I'm saying it was all round. It was good. The game was really good. Meeting the people beforehand was really good. Apart from the worry of like, who else has my number now? Like covering the game was good. I wasn't meant to go on the radio, but I managed to find a way to get into the radio area, which is 5 stories up from where I was, which they just let me do. It wasn't on my thing, but the lift route, so I had to do the 5 stairs, but you know, whatever. I'm a fit guy. I can do it. And then I just did the second half on TalkSport, which was a lot of fun. The view, if you're in the radio gantry, that is a view, my friends. That is incredible. That is the one. Whereas on the press, you're kind of low down. I was kind of in a corner. I was right next to actual fans, which is nice because you kind of really get a sense of it. But being up on that radio platform, wow. Absolutely impeccable view. Like halfway line, just the right height, everything, you see it perfectly. I cannot recommend it enough. If anyone's got the time between now and Sunday to form a radio career, get yourself established, get accredited, and somehow get a job on national radio. If you can do that in the next few days, I highly recommend it because the view is spectacular. Again, not that you ask.
So you know how Murph got your number though, don't you? Because he's like UK NFL mafia, so like he has all of our numbers. We don't even, you know, we're all working for him. Don't forget.
I'm worried that like if he's got my number, he's probably got the contents of everything on my phone. And there's going to be at some point he'll be like, "Can you come and do a spot on the show?" And I'll be like, "Nah, mate, I'm busy." And he's like, "It'd be terrible if these photos came out." How did you get that?
I agree with you, Matt. Murph literally does know everyone, doesn't he? In the 5 yard chat tonight, there was Lee, who Lee's done a lot of the graphics over the years for 5 yard, but he's over in Miami at the moment. And Murph was like, "Oh yeah, say hi to such and such a body," and it's just like probably like some kind of like. God knows even what the guy is, probably like a kit manager of the Miami Dolphins or something. But he's like, I'm like,
I thought you were going to say like a Bolivian drug runner.
Well, you're not allowed to say that publicly, Ben. That's also accurate.
That's another.
I mean, I've driven around in Miami with he wasn't a drug runner. His parents were. But he was Bolivian, and we had a lot of weapons in the car, and it was a pretty wild day. But again, not that you asked. So that's a story for another time. That's Ben riding around Miami with a lot of guns.
Did you tell that story on TalkSport?
if it comes up, if we're talking about things we've done in Miami and people we know in Miami, then it might come up. To be fair, that trip to Miami, I did write about it for a legitimate magazine. It was a story about kind of like the real story behind the film Scarface. So I did have to go around and go to the sort of areas that Scarface would have been. I mean, very little of this film Scarface was filmed in Miami, but we went to the place it was filmed. We went to the sort of places that inspired it, and yeah, pretty wild. And the guy saying like, "Look, don't worry, we've got plenty of guns in the car if it comes to it, but do you know how to fire a gun?" Thankfully, I have a little bit of gun experience. I think anyone who's been to Vegas has ended up hiring a machine gun, or at least I have. I love a bargain, right? I love a bargain. And if I go into a hotel and I see a leaflet and it says, and I'm not joking here, I saw this and it was like, how can I turn that down? It said $5 off any machine gun rental. And I thought, like, God bless America. Like, what is that, the most American thing I've ever seen in my life? And I went in, I had no experience of like, you know, guns, but I went in and I was like, I'd like to rent a gun, I'd like to fire a gun. I've never done it before. It's a long time ago. And the guy looks me up and down and he can tell, like, yeah, this British guy has no idea what he's doing. And he's like, okay, well, you know, here's a selection of handguns. And at one he's like, this Beretta, very popular with ladies. okay. But yeah, I kind of got, so I'm like, okay, yeah, like, give me a handgun. And he just gave me a handgun and like a Ziploc bag of bullets. And I went to the firing range and, you know, I did that. And then I went and got an Uzi, but, with the Uzi, they'll give you the Uzi, they'll hand you the Uzi, but they're like, you have to collect the bullets around there. You can't just walk around the store and on the street. It's like, all you do is show your passport.
Wow.
So yeah. Bloody. Anyway, what's this podcast about?
Yeah.
It's just story time with Ben.
I'm picturing you turning up and the guy just giving you the equivalent of a little noisy cricket from Men in Black, just like a little toy thing. Like,
yeah. I'm imagining that when you got there, your phone went, Ben, and it was Murph, and he was saying, giving you the password for the top stuff and all that, like, you know, to get the AK-47s and all that. Like,
yeah. I'm hopefully going to be in Florida next month as well, so I might have to kind of hit up his contact. He's probably got contact in Tallahassee. I'm hopefully going to be in Tallahassee.
He spent time out there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he was over there, yeah.
Yeah.
Any Florida Gators fan. NFL while you're over in Florida?
That's the purpose of the visit, in fact. Yeah. In theory, I mean, I know the flights are booked, but until I'm there, it still feels too good to be true. Meant to be going to Tallahassee to see Florida State versus University of Miami. Because Florida State are going to be obviously one of the teams coming to Dublin next season, so it's part of the push for that. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I want to see some high school football the night before. It's the Florida regional quarterfinals, so my hope is that at one of the levels of high school football, one of the Tallahassee teams has got a home game that weekend, so I can go to see that. I've seen high school football in Texas, which obviously is like the pinnacle, but Florida's not far below that. So it'd be nice to be able to do both at the same time. I've even got Florida State jumper on right now, in fact. So, yeah, it'll be nice to get to Doak Campbell. Fingers crossed it all happens. Like I say, the flight's booked, but until I'm through the door, I kind of, it won't feel totally real.
Jack, that's your team, isn't it, Florida State?
It is my team, yeah. I'm hoping to get over to Ireland next year for the game. So we'll see.
Well, if we can get tickets.
We can both go and be drunk, Nick. So.
I'm not sure when tickets go on sale, but it's not going to be like Notre Dame Navy, where basically all the tickets will be taken by Americans. I think if you want a ticket and you're reasonably quick, I think you'll probably get a ticket. I think they're going to really be pushing for it. That's why I'm going over to kind of check it all out and see how it's gonna work in Dublin. But I think it's gonna be fantastic. I love those college games in Dublin. I think they're really well done. I've been to the last two. And this one is gonna feel a bit different. I think there's gonna be more locals for this one. Like Notre Dame was almost exclusively Americans. It was hard for anyone this side of the Atlantic to get in. It was the largest peacetime movement of people from America into another country, which, like, wow, yeah, okay, that seems wild, but it's like about 40,000 people who came over and they all seem to be in Temple Bar. So yeah, if you can I would highly recommend it. Dublin's great fun city anyway, but you put a college football game in there as well, then yeah, all bets are off.
Do you think there's the possibility of it ever coming here, the college game?
I don't think so, and I think what works nicely at the moment is that London has carved out its niche as the NFL's home away from home. This is the place the NFL can go and feel comfortable. We've had, 35 games in London now. It's very, very much established. And that Dublin can be the home of college football in Europe. And I know that loads of NFL fans in Ireland would love to see an NFL game over there. And I'm not saying I don't think it'll happen, but I think the NFL will feel there's a lot of other cities in the queue I firmly expect the Bears to be playing in Madrid next season, from what I've heard. We'll see if that comes to pass. I'm expecting two Jags games again next season. And I'm expecting it to be three games in total, and again, two Jags games. I think that separation is kind of good. I think college football can get could get swallowed up, especially in London. I think if they did it in, say, Manchester or in Scotland, so somewhere a bit of distance from London, then it could potentially work. But I kind of like the idea of Dublin is the home in Europe for college football. London is the home for NFL in Europe.
Yeah, fair. Well, we're 16 minutes in and completely off script here. One of the
I don't know whose fault that is.
I mean, it's the first and probably last time guns will probably ever be discussed on the show. But the reason we've got you on, Ben, you recently have written a book. But what we wanted is for the listeners to know a little bit more about you. Obviously, you're a household name to the likes of us, but a little bit more about you, your story, what brought you to writing the book and this point. But most importantly, we are a DFS show, so what kind of impact DFS has had, you feel, on the growth of the sport here, and what kind of exposure you've got to it as well?
So I'm like a lot of people of a certain age. I'm older than I look, guys. Quite a bit older than I look. That's the benefit of getting plenty of sleep and drinking plenty of water and using SPF. But I fell in love with the sport in the 80s, specifically because of the Chicago Bears. I think a lot of people who fell in love with the sport in the mid-80s basically fell in love with the Chicago Bears. Fell in love with the Bears, and because of that, they became NFL fans. So I was one of those people, you know, always watching it on Channel 4. We barely had any to watch, but you would really make the most of it. You know, you would never skip it. It was appointment viewing. You'd be there like 6 p.m. Sunday in front of your TV. And when they started showing it on Tuesday nights as well, it's like, oh my God, it's double now. It was a huge deal. In fact, I still remember, it was a massive thing to me. The opening game of the 87, opening Monday Night Football game of the 87 season. And it was the first time that Channel 4 would show highlights on a Tuesday. So we used to have to wait a whole week for highlights back then, which seems mad now that we could watch every game at once now. But back then, you'd wait a week for highlights and you wouldn't know the results. So it didn't really matter. But at this point, they were showing some highlights on a Tuesday and they were showing Monday Night Football. This game was less than 24 hours old. That felt super fresh. And it was Bears Giants. They were calling it Super Bowl 21 and a half. It was a great spectacle. In the end, it was like a relatively easy Bears win. Of course, that 87 Giants team kind of fell off a cliff after being so good in 86. But no one was to know that was going to happen. So it was just a huge occasion. The idea of like, we get to see that a day later. And it was around that sort of time that I was hooked. Like everything in my life at that point had to be American football. I was getting first down newspaper every week. I would get any magazines. My like room was covered in posters of NFL players, just everything. I just could not get enough of it. And then in the 90s, lots of people started falling away from it. Like it was a cool thing for kids to be into in the 80s, and then it wasn't so cool. Like basketball became cooler. People weren't really watching basketball, but you had the Dream Team of 92. You had just the idea of like Michael Jordan, and everything was just, it was all so much cooler than the NFL. And then you had like the Premier League and Italian football. And the NFL was just really an afterthought. And people like me, they were still fans, but perhaps they were not as obsessive about it, in part because like at this point, I'm a teenager, I'm doing other things. You know, there's more to my life than just like watching the NFL. And thankfully, I stuck with it, you know, and I've been a fan ever since. But in those early days, like I watched Super Bowl 20, and it's not like I literally thought these words, but this is how it felt. This is the greatest team ever, and they're just going to win every Super Bowl, and there's never going to be any down point. Like, this won't dip. Like, look how good this team is. These players are amazing. And then when they didn't win the Super Bowl the next season, I remember thinking, like, huh, is that what that feels like? I better not get used to that. I don't like that. That's not great. So then, you know, when they beat the Giants week one of 87, I thought, oh, there we go. See, things are normal now. The Giants were amazing last season, but of course this Bears team would beat them. And let's just look forward to lots more Super Bowls. You know, let's get ready for that. And yeah, still waiting for that one, guys. But, you know, obviously my love of the sport hasn't gone anywhere. And as time has gone on, you see the way the sport has progressed in this country. Like, how big it is compared with, I guess, any time before the international series, that we are in a glorious time now. Now, at the start of that international series, anyone who was at that Giants-Dolphins game, the game was terrible. The field was not ready. It was not suitable for an NFL game and got completely destroyed. Cleo Lemon at quarterback for the Dolphins. Like, this is what America's exporting. This is a hate crime. Like, the game was awful. But I was in the locker room afterwards. I presented OC Umanura with a copy of Time Out London magazine because I worked at Time Out London, and he was, you know, he's from London. Here's Time Out London magazine. Him looking at me like, what the hell is going on here? Why am I being handed this? Something I was able to remind him of, like, about 15 years later. But if the Giants hadn't won that Super Bowl that year, there's a very good chance there were no other games in London, that was a one-off. Because the owners didn't really like it. The players didn't really like it, except the Giants did. The Giants, as we all know, used that as a bonding experience, that trip. Ended up improbably winning that Super Bowl. And with that, prevented anyone from ever saying, oh, a trip to London's going to disrupt your season. Because that's it now, it's done. Argument's gone. You can say you don't want to go there, but you can't say it's bad for the team. It's over. So God bless that Giants team, because we wouldn't have what we have right now if not for that. So if anyone ever meets Eli Manning, Victor Cruz, whoever, shake them by the hand, because we would not be in the position we are now if not for them. Jack, I'm sure, is really feeling this one. So with everything that's happened, though, I can credit the Giants with that. And we can credit, no matter, people are going to moan about Roger Goodell, but you can credit Roger Goodell with making sure that games were played here. You can credit Sky and the terrestrial broadcasters for making sure we had that and all that sort of stuff. And people did give credit to them. And I realized no one really gives credit to the fans unless they actually want something. Like, they'll be like, oh, you fans are amazing. Buy these tickets. Like, there was no one ever saying, God, we're in this position in part because of the fans. The fans are the ones spending money on Game Pass, on Sky Sports, buying the tickets, staying up super late to make it worth terrestrial broadcasters to pay people to be in a studio in the middle of the night because people are actually staying up to watch. And I thought, I would like to do something about NFL fans in the UK and what they've done. And I kind of was kicking this idea around in my head for a while. And eventually I woke up one morning and I thought, what if every chapter of the book is an individual person's story and it will all fit together as a chronological history, but it's actually now the fans' voices. It's not me simply telling the fans' story. It's me presenting those voices in a way, because really, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, no one wants my story in that book. I just want to let those stories speak for themselves. Like, it's not my perspective, it's their perspective. It's not, here's my vision on how I think the NFL has progressed in this country. It's those fans, and those fans represent everybody. And I do feel that anyone who reads the book, there'll be at least one chapter and be like, oh yeah, that's my story. Or it'll be like, yeah, it's a bit of that one, and a bit of that one, and a bit of that one. So it was hard work making sure it felt fully universal, and that I did each individual person justice, and that I did the whole community justice, because I know if the boot was on the other foot, and I read that book and I felt, look, I've been a part of this NFL community for decades. This book doesn't represent me. This isn't my experience. I'd mouth off about it, and I'd be well within my rights. And anyone who feels that it doesn't represent them, then, you know, they can mouth off about it, because that's their right. But I haven't heard anyone do that yet. So I'm hoping it has represented everyone in some way.
And where does DFS come into that?
So one of the chapters in the book is about fantasy sports in general, but much more about the traditional fantasy leagues, where people, you know, it's kind of like Murph's mantra about, like, you know, you probably aren't going to know like a bunch of people who can play in a fantasy league with you, but you don't want them to be completely anonymous. And with social media, especially, you can get to know those people, that sort of thing. And there's a chapter on gambling, because British people love gambling. We have a very different relationship with gambling than the Americans do, where it's all a bit like, oh, this is really illicit. Whereas, like, we would have grown up passing betting shops, the horse racing on the TV, that just, you know, none of this seemed weird, you know? And like, I've got no interest in betting on horses, but it's right there. It's always there. Like when I was a little kid, my mum worked in a branch of William Hill. You know, it's like, it's just there. It's part of the fabric of how we consume sports. And DFS is in the middle of those two things. It's in the middle of that kind of informed sports betting. So I'm sure people have some sort of strategies when it comes to like betting on horse races. I'm not going to dismiss it, but I think a lot of people are just like pointing to someone's silks and picking them, or that name sounds good, or I like those odds. Whereas when it comes to betting on the NFL, I spoke to Ollie Thornton about this. So he's the person I speak to in the book, and he really knows his gambling, and talking about the value that can be had in that sort of sports betting. So then you combine that with the fantasy element, and obviously that's DFS. You know, it's using your knowledge, and it's much less about kind of the camaraderie of I'm going to be in this with my mates, and it's like, oh, look, I'm playing you this week and I beat you. It's a different thing. It's like, I'm going out to try and win something here. So I think, and this is probably a big kind of claim, I would say in the last 5 years, nothing has done more for the NFL in the UK than the rise of DFS, because it scratches that itch of British fans who love sport, who know the sport that they want to kind of put a few quid on and win something from, and that fantasy element. So, you know, like, DFS is, I think it is hard, right? I think it's a hard thing to be good at. So at the moment, I'm doing that FFS show with Nat, and we kind of have fun with it because we are not DFS experts. And it's like, okay, we'll have a chat about like who could have a big week. And it's, for us, it's a way in to talk about the upcoming games in a certain way. So it might be we talk about a player so we can talk about that game. And I'm there, like, I'm trying to look at, okay, well, like, who's good value here? And, you know, you've got to look at the situations. And one of the things I love actually about DFS is the way that it makes people appreciate situations. Like, if you put Daniel Jones in certain teams, is he going to do better? Like, if you put Patrick Mahomes on this Giants team, how does that compare with what Daniel Jones does, as an example? And you have to assess the situations and the matchups that they're having. So anyone who listens to us on FFS will be like, okay, they're not very good at this, like, in comparison with some other people, right? And someone could be like, oh, well, it's all luck, right? It's just luck. But it can't be, because the people who are good at it are good at it on quite a consistent basis, right? So when I look at the other people on this screen, and the fact it's called, you know, it's called Touchdowns for Dope. This isn't like Touchdowns for Fun, you know. This is for people who are looking to win a few quid, you know. I mean, I joked with Murph that, like, I think he'd said like, oh yeah, at some point Jack's going to hit the Millie Maker. And I was like, he's going to be the first British NFL owner. Like, he's going to end up winning so much. He's going to be like, right, I'm buying, I don't know, whoever's for sale. I'm going to have them and let's have some fun with it. But this is the thing, right? There's always, and I'm not going to try and step on anyone's toes here, there's always an element of luck in anything like this. But the people who are prepared, the people who do their research, the people who know the difference in being able to spot that value, they do well at it. So you've got the fact that people who know a bit about it, they may dabble in DFS, enjoy it, starts to do well. They then spread the word, and it gets bigger and bigger. And it means that people who aren't huge NFL fans, but enjoy betting on sports that they're interested in and that they're informed about, they're drawn to DFS because it's perfect for that. It's not like mindless gambling, but it's like it is a proper game, but you can win some serious money if you're prepared to invest a little bit of your own money and invest the time to really understand the game. And the way that DFS has exploded, like when it was starting to get big in America, I really didn't think it would be like that over here, but it is so much bigger than I would ever expected. And it seems like I speak to people who are really into DFS, and 5 or 10 years ago, they were not particularly big NFL fans. But the DFS is so good, the NFL, in terms of it's such a perfect product for the NFL, that those people who want to dabble, they just become people who are watching so many hours of the NFL. So yeah, I honestly don't think that any one thing has done more for the sport in the UK in terms of bringing people in than DFS in the last 5 years. I think it's been huge. And people like you are part of that, because like, you know me, I always bang on about the idea of it's a community, and it's people who are doing things for others. And I'm not going to get into a whole thing about influencers because like Matt Cohen's not here. But
sorry, Ben, you're an influencer now. Sorry.
Now, so to me, I'm the Ben influencer. But to me, here's the difference, right? If you're an influencer, you are selling yourself as a brand and basically as an advertising billboard. So if you're an influencer, and this is no matter what section of the world that you're part of, right? You are basically presenting yourself to advertisers and brands with a message of, tell me what to say and I'll say it, right? Like that's how it works. That's how you will make that money. You find your niche, you find your sector. Like, I'm sure there are a lot of people who are looking to make money from the NFL right now in terms of like advertising, who if the NFL started to become super unpopular and it became all about MLB or NBA, they'd switch like that, right? So for those people where it's like, just tell me what to read, like, let me read these lines and be like, you know, I'll push this product. I don't care what it is. Just give me the money. Just give me the exposure. Make me famous. To me, that's the influencer side, rather than the people who are like, I'm doing this because I love it. This isn't about me looking great on camera. This isn't about like me getting loads of weird sponsorships. It's people like you guys filling in the gaps and creating this community. Like when you're super passionate about something and you want other people to be able to enjoy it like you do. So before I started doing that first FFS, I was like, I've got to listen to this Touchdowns for Dough, because it's not simply like the way you set it up. It was kind of like the way I heard it is this show will make you a more intelligent DFS player. It's not, here are just the players for this week, but let's make you a more intelligent player of the game, which is what I appreciate. And you're just spreading that to the community. And that's what I love, because you were doing it because you love this. You love the community. You love the camaraderie. You love everything you do. I mean, you know, the only one of you I've met in person is Jack. And that was the other day. The only time I did once see him in person as Tube doors were closing, and I didn't get the chance to shout to him.
Sliding doors.
Exactly. Things could have been so different. It could have been him writing the book.
And it could have been me. He can't write, Ben. He can't write.
Well, cheers, Mark.
He might have also won the Millie Maker, and he can pay someone to write the book.
Yeah.
But you know, just you're there with people who presumably you didn't know until social media, and just playing games with Jack, and just that community is so important. It's important to me. It's important that the thing that we've all played a part in creating. I'm no more important in creating that than anyone else who's got a podcast or whatever, because it's only as strong as we all are together. So that's why podcasts like this are so important, because you're doing it for everybody. And that's what I love. And that's why I've got to tip my hat to everybody like you doing this for the love of the sport and the love of the community, not because you think, oh, we're going to get this massive sponsorship and this is going to be my platform to something real, not something stupid like American football. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to be on the One Show this time next year. Jack's hosting the One Show. You know what
oh,
I mean?
No. I'm going to win the million, retire. I've completed DFS when I
Ben,
do that,
Ben, so. I'm really going to disappoint you now, Ben, because my dream, when me and Nick were put together like 3 or 4 years ago, by somebody else. We were put together by Stocks, weren't we?
Like an arranged marriage.
Yeah, basically. And when my dream then was to be the first fantasy sports podcaster on Strictly. and I'm still waiting. There you go.
Hey, Mark, I don't know that vision back then. We could have made it happen. I
now my knees have gone.
I mean, a dream deferred is a dream denied. Like, we've got to try and make this happen. I wish I had those contacts for you.
Yeah, but you know, in history, when they look at the point where Strictly suddenly wasn't the darling of BBC, I suspect it would be the moment that I was on the Launch Show and they paired me with, I don't know who it would be, but like...
I think if we ever get to a point where a DFS podcaster is a primetime TV star, and it's basically they're introduced like, you know, and from Touchdowns for Dough, like at that point, I think we've all made it. Do you know what I mean? But if you're on there and you're thinking, oh, I hope they don't mention the fact that I did a poxy little DFS show with these losers.
It's the only reason to be there.
You know, then that's the difference.
Do you know what they do as well, Ben? You know, when they show the week of training and stuff, they'll be like,
I've never
my professional
will
be like,
I hate to really disappoint you.
He's still working. He's still doing Touchdowns for Dough, even though he's on Strictly. He's such a hard worker. He's up at like, you know, 10 in the morning, ready for a show at 9 o'clock.
Up at 10 in the morning. What? The fact you threw that one out there was like, that's an early time?
No. I landed at, I've only got home at 2:45 a.m. this morning because of flight delays and stuff. So you have to forgive me a bit. I'm running on fumes.
Speaking of the Millie, guys, anyway, congratulations to David Bailey.
Oh, man, jeez. Go, Dave, go, Dave.
He had the biggest Millie sweat ever
Sunday night. What was he up to, 25th?
Yeah, he got up to 25th, and he finished 33rd overall, won $2,500. So congratulations to him. Nice.
I was on that sweat with him. I think you'd probably gone to sleep at that point, Jack, because you were very, very quiet in the chat. But he still won't tell us what content he's absorbing. Like, who is it?
He knows we'll kick him out of the WhatsApp group if he sells.
So here's something, right? If someone from the UK won the Millie Maker, like how big a deal would that be for the UK DFS community? Like, I mean, and I'm not saying that as a rhetorical question. I'm asking like from your perspective, because I'm thinking like that would be like massive from like an NFL UK. That person would become on social media at least a celebrity to everybody who knows the NFL in this country. That person would be like, they'd probably be set up as like, that person's genius. That person must know everything.
It is amazing when you have a big win, the amount of followers, the new followers that you gain. I experienced this, what, week two was it, with Tony Jones when he went into the end zone twice. I gained about 350 followers in the space of like 2 hours or something. And I was like, guys, I'm not giving out picks. So, and then all the followers just went back down again.
By the way, Ben, there's people who've run, who win hundreds of thousands. There's UK people who win hundreds of thousands on DFS, yes. You know, not always, not necessarily in NFL, definitely in golf. We've had lots of big winners and stuff because there's plenty of professional DFS players in the UK. But yeah, the Millie Maker thing, if they publicise it, I mean, you know, if I won the Millie, nobody would know.
No, you would, you'd be like, why hasn't he turned up?
Well, they would know. Yeah, you know, they would know because they all know my username. But like, I wouldn't be there screenshotting because I never screenshot anything. The only time I screenshotted this year because me and Nick had that, you know, Mark v Nick thing in the Ashes League, and I just wanted to put I hate Nick of Wigan, so I did a screenshot for that. But like, which I still think should be a great T-shirt. I really do. But yeah, so not everybody screenshots. So yeah, I mean, you know. I think you're right, though. It would become, I think people, when they win a milli, especially if they're quite active on the Twitter, they'll be asked to loads of shows anyway for rotor grinders and people like that and stuff. So like,
they'd probably be there doing like the coin toss at an NFL game at Spurs.
Hey, I'll sing the national anthem if I win it. I'll sing a national anthem.
I want Jack and Nick singing the national anthem as a duet and you dancing to it.
I'll dance it, yeah, with, yeah.
And yeah, he'll be like, he's been up since 10 a.m., guys.
Yeah.
I think...
give him a break.
I think poor Murph had enough of my singing on Sunday. I was singing Sweet Caroline and Don't Look Back in Anger. And I think he... yeah, he was just sitting there drinking water and there's me just swaying.
I just wait till you got into the stadium. Yeah, I mean...
They put the multi-choice thing on, didn't they? I wasn't at the game, but I know they put the multi-choice
thing
on.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
I did it at Wembley, and one of the guys in the box I was in, the choices were like Sweet Caroline and a song by the Ramones. And he's like, oh, I love the Ramones. And I was like, that's not going to be Sweet Caroline in this
game. Don't waste your vote. Yeah. Don't waste your vote.
Yeah, it's really gratifying, Ben, that you have... like what you've said about this show, quite humbling that we're not just the usual run of the mill give picks every week, because there's a lot of that out there and you can absorb that content either by watching it, listening to it, reading it. But we set out this year as a show that wanted to be a little bit different and wanted to educate. We're probably not going to educate the people who are winning, you know, more often than not, which doesn't happen a lot in DFS, let's be honest. Most people lose more often than they win, even the best. But we wanted to appeal to people that might be new to it or people that wanted to get better at it, because we know that this community has spilled out into other communities, like, for example, the FPL community. There's more and more of them now playing fantasy NFL, and because they know that there's money and gambling involved, obviously, in DFS, they're now playing NFL DFS. So we get viewers from that community now that are like, oh, you know, we watch your show, great show and stuff like that. And it's like, it's nice that you've seen that and thought, well, do you know what? Yeah, they're doing something different. And that's really good, because that's exactly what we set out to do.
Yeah. And it really comes across. And again, you're making my point. There are people who can see what you can do in DFS and are coming to it. And then they fall in love with the sport. Because like, I feel like in theory, you could do DFS for any sport and have very little interest in it, but you'll end up getting so much more out of it. So, you know, I'd imagine that, I know that, you know, you've done well in golf, but that's you know, it's something that you love watching as well. It's that much more fun doing the research and figuring it out when it's something you love. Now, Jack, I saw you putting out NHL stuff, because obviously the NHL season is about to start. Now, yeah. I don't know how much time you'll spend on NHL, and I don't know how much interest you have in NHL. It's like
I have no interest.
It felt like a side thing of like, there's an opportunity there. I might make a few quid from it, but you're not going to have the passion You know, it's not going to be like, well, I'm going to, you know, sit and watch all this. I can just, I identify opportunities. And there will be some of those people, like you say, from FPL, who will just identify the opportunities. And you'll get a big chunk of them, though, who are like, I really like this sport. Like, there's, when you've set your lineup, watching Red Zone or whatever, I mean, if you're really focused on your lineup, you're probably watching Red Zone. That is an incredible way to spend a Sunday evening. You know, like, that is a really exciting and fulfilling thing to do, of like, right, got my lineup, I'm going to watch it like this. And not many other sports are set up like that. So for those people who decide to dabble, those people who are like, oh, I can see there's a few quid that's going to be made, and I'll, you know, I do my FPL and I'm going to do NFL DFS. You have some Sundays where you do quite well and you're watching Red Zone. That's an amazing Sunday night.
Red Zone is just great for DFS, because like you say, Ben, you can just sit there on a Sunday night, you can watch your lineup, see how it's doing. You know, you get really excited when your guys are scoring touchdowns and other guys are not. You know, like, I've jumped up many a times in my front room, like, on teams that I don't even support, and, you know, like, just, it's been like a, I don't know, like a 60-yard bomb down the field to Marvin Mims, for example, and you just jump up going mad. Like, my wife,
Jack, comes down, were you,
like, you are crazy, but
Jack, were you very proud of those lineups?
Sorry?
Were you proud of those lineups?
Yes, I was very proud of those lineups.
Sorry, Ben, that's a bit of an in joke. It's like, I just laugh. It's just one thing to make me laugh when people are proud of their lineups. I'm proud of my child. I'm proud of my son. I'm not proud of my DFS lineups, you know? Like,
I'm so proud of the way that Mim's got a. I feel like he was really motivated by my DFS lineup.
Yeah. I generally go into the slate hating my lineups, which is the best way.
It's a little bit like writing, right? Because you've got to be, if you are too attached to the words that you're writing, you can't edit it properly, and you can't look at it in an objective way. You know, you're too close to it. And I imagine, like, with a lineup, you can really convince yourself that, oh, this is it, and you can then be so disappointed if you go into it like, I probably messed that up. No matter how much thought you've got into it, at least then you aren't quite as full of, like, the self-hatred, which is what you end up like if you're writing and you think you love something and then you've got to tear it apart. Because a lot of the time you've got to tear it apart. With writing, just like with DFS, most of the time you get it wrong and you've got to redo it. So similar disciplines, which just shows, look, any of you could write a book.
I'm just thinking there's another niche we need to aim for, writers in DFS.
I'm sure there's a thing. I mean, right, part of the thing I'm hoping with the book, right, is like, this isn't the end of the story for UK NFL fandom. It isn't like, okay, it's, you know, 1982 to 2023, job done, you know, the end of history, that's it. I'm hoping that lots of people think, oh, well, I really enjoyed this book. I could write something that is simply my perspective, or I really want to write about DFS fandom in the UK and maybe try and get that published. And the better that this book does, the more likely is that the publisher is going to be like, yeah, we'll publish a book about DFS fandom in the UK. Why not? There's enough people out there doing it. So I really hope that in the future, there are people that are like, oh yeah, I wrote this book because I realized that it can be done. A publisher will put out and sell a book that's about UK fans in the NFL, because 15 years ago, that would have seemed like a really stupid idea. Like, why would anyone write that? And why would anyone buy it? But I think for a lot of UK fans, it's nice, the idea of like, oh, look, here's an actual book and it's about us. So for those particular niches, why not have someone in 5 years write about the history of DFS in the UK and the difference it's made and the different people in the scene and the way they came into it. And, like, again, that would tell a lot of people's stories, you know, because a lot of people, you know, the three of you might have each one a different story, but there'll be a load of people who have a similar story to you, if you know what I mean. It's all there. Yeah.
It's funny you say that, Ben, because I watched your show with Murph the other week. I was the Mark in the chat who was talking to you about the fact that we could hear Murph and he can hear us and all that.
Yes.
Yeah, that was me. And afterwards, I messaged Murph because I really love the show and stuff. And I said to him, because your book starts like with Channel 4, doesn't it? Sort of thing. And my story starts a little bit before then because, you know, I actually am the age I look, and as opposed to you, Ben. And actually, I said to Murph, I'm going to write down my personal story from that bit because actually it's got a lot of connection to my dad who died when I was young. And all of that, and it's all pre Channel 4 now, because there was the NFL was in the UK then. It was just very hard to find it, but it was there. Yeah. And I wrote it. It's not something I'd ever show anybody because it's a very personal thing, because it was a family thing. But that came from literally watching you talking about that whole story thing. And that's, you know, I thank you for that, because I mean that genuinely. I know we've had a bit of a laugh on here, but like, yeah, that was from your interview with Murph, really.
I really appreciate that, and I hope there are other people who kind of who feel the same, because there are going to be so many people who will think about when they got into the sport, and they will think about people who are no longer with us. So, you know, my mum died when I was 16, and there was when the Bears were in London to play the Raiders, the first game at Tottenham, the Athletic had got in touch with me and was like, we want to interview some, like, I guess, prominent Bears fans in the UK. And we talked about kind of my story, and we talked about a Bears keyring I've got. Now, I, as a kid, I used to have lots of keyrings, collect keyrings, like go on a trip somewhere to some castle, got to get a keyring, that sort of thing. But when I was old enough to actually have a house key, I only ever put one keyring on there. And it was a keyring that my mum got me in 1988 in Covent Garden. My mum and dad had won like VIP tickets to like the 88 FA Cup final. They were staying at the Savoy, and I was on Cub camp. I was in a tent. It was rubbish. I hate camping. Well, I do now. I thought it was going to be good. Hate camping. Couldn't even watch the FA Cup final. My dad's there. And my mum bought me this Bears keyring from Covent Garden. And you know, that goes everywhere with me. And it means that the Bears go everywhere with me, and my mum goes everywhere with me. And it's weird, the idea that, like, that story is actually out there on The Athletic. Like, if you kind of Google my name in The Athletic, that story is going to come up. It's probably a picture of the keyring. Like, just we all have these personal stories. And they might not always feel like super profound right now, but maybe in 20, 30 years time, when you look back, some of it will. It might be like a friend you've lost touch with, or it could be anything, you know, like this sport, as with any sport, can really kind of bring us together, and we will end up having kind of special memories about those people. And again, it is all about that community, that we are not even if you don't have an NFL fan in your street, because of podcasts like this and many others, we are connected to people who we don't know. Like, how many times had I been like chatting back and forth with you, Jack, on Twitter, and we didn't actually ever meet in person until a couple of days ago. You know, these things. And I, you know, and that almost didn't happen. Like, if Murph hadn't phoned me, how did he get my number? And if he hadn't phoned me, we might have not then. But the people like you are kind of making sure that it's not just a bunch of individuals around, it's an actual community. And again, that's the difference between people like you and the influencers. It's about bringing people together, not what can I get out of the community, it's what can I do for the community. And you're not necessarily getting up in the morning thinking, oh, I'm such a good person, what can I do for the NFL community today? I don't mean you're doing it like that, but it's like, that's basically how it is. Like, what would be good? What would people want to listen to? Like, what advice can we actually give them that's going to be useful? How can we make sure that people start to love DFS like we do? How can I get an excuse to kind of be able to sit around with my mates online and talk about this without my wife being like, what the hell are you doing? Oh, I'm making a podcast. It's important. Like, and this is it. And this is why I love the community.
If there is a DFS bookmark, I think there needs to be a chapter dedicated to how I picked you and landed at Wembley, and you didn't. How that story started as a friendship.
Yeah.
Two people brought together.
Yeah.
To that.
I almost think that like you three should not be allowed in any Nat Coombs Show DFS competitions because you're just absolutely cleaning up. But
again this week.
Cool. But again, like what does that together? I mean, the thing is what's great is that I think with the FFS show that we do, and just with the way that the Nat Coombs Show has such a kind of wide audience, that there are lots of people basically playing DFS for the first time. And they don't really know what they're doing, but they're having some fun with it, and they're able to kind of play for free, and they might win something. But then they can look at guys like you, and like, right, okay, the guys who really know what they're doing, the guys who study and they've got that knowledge, they do pretty well at this. It can't just be all luck. If it's like, oh right, yeah, it's Nick again. Yeah, can someone send another email to Nick? He's what's he won this time? You know, like you guys make more money from that show than I do. That's not right.
I tell you what, people will think I'm a madman, the things that I do. Just before this show tonight, for instance, I spent 2 hours looking at winning lineups from this past week.
That's not mad, done. Nick. Jack, that's not mad. That's not mad.
It is mad. Well, my wife thinks it's mad.
Yeah. So, yes. Ben, I'd say one advice I'd give to everybody, because we're running out of time here, aren't we, Nick? So we can't do everything we're going to do tonight.
Wait, are we recording yet?
Yeah. is just don't try to predict what happens on the field. Simplest thing. Don't try to predict what happens on the field.
Yep, absolutely. I think we'll finish on Fantasy Game Day app. You had the privilege of meeting the fellows behind Fantasy Game Day app this past weekend, Jack. And exciting, if you follow the socials this week, you will know that we have partnered with them. We spoke about it on last week's show. It went down well. It seems like there's more and more in the community that are also now jumping on the ad, three-figure entries. I think that's maybe the first time this weekend. Maybe they had it previously.
121.
Yeah, it was the first time they got to triple digits
this weekend. Nice to see that it's gaining traction there. But yeah, we have partnered with them. Jack, your experiences from meeting the fellas behind it?
Yeah, just really like great bunch of guys, really. You know, just want to be a part of the community, grow DFS in this country. Great bunch of guys. And they bought me a beer, so I was well happy.
And if you do want to join up this weekend or any weekend subsequently after that, we have a promo, do we, Jack?
We do, yeah. It's just TDs4D. That's our promo code. And that will get you a free entry after your first initial deposit and your first entry into one of the games.
There you go. There you go.
My lineup this for this week, I've got Aaron Rodgers, I've got Justin Jefferson, OJ Simpson.
I saw one of them jerseys at the London game, actually, an OJ Simpson one. Speaking of OJ Simpson, yeah.
Was it OJ Simpson?
It was OJ. No,
hey, there's a really good story about OJ Simpson in the book as well, of someone's kind of connection with OJ Simpson. So
I wouldn't be publicising that.
Oh, it's a good story. It's a good story.
This was last week's winning lineup. Unfortunately, not one that belonged to any of us on the show. But I mean, again, we said it last week. If you nail your captain in this format, that's the way to win. Merck, you said that you've got a bit of an interesting theory that might seem quite obvious, or is quite obvious, but you made it out to be interesting in the chat. So if it isn't, then you've just absolutely thrown me under the bus there.
Yeah. Talk about pressure. It was just this thing about the captain I find really fascinating. And that's why I kind of enjoyed playing this game so far, because it's actually a completely new twist. So last week it was won because Chase scored 50 points, basically, and they got doubled up. There's only a handful of players in fantasy who are capable of winning 50 points. You know, even Jefferson wasn't getting close to it and stuff. He's saying pretty average, around 30 points. And we kind of know who they are. My point here is, do you... So everybody's going to be like Tyreek Hill this week in that spot, probably Chase again. There's a couple of others. We'll go in there. I think you make more money in the long run, potentially by not playing those players in the captain, because it's that thing about duplicates, again, which, you know, links in with everything Jack's been saying for weeks and stuff, is they're going to be so popular and stuff. You probably make more money by playing a cheaper captain on a week where those guys fail.
Yeah.
It's that maximising your winnings. It's just the view on it. I mean, I'm not sure I'm necessarily going to do it. Because it seems to me, yeah, there's a couple of obvious plays this week. But yeah, that was really the point, Nick, was, you know, do you do that thing where you know you're going to lose for most of the weeks, but when you win, you're going to always be a chart contention to go to the top because you've got, like, I don't know, like a Tank Dell in your captain spot and stuff, and because there's no outlier. This year, we've had quite a lot of outlier scores, haven't we, if you think about it? You know, Tyreek Hill, A-Chain, I mean, all of the Miami team.
CMC last week, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. But there'll be weeks where there's no outlier score, where 30 points is like the top, 35 points or whatever. That was really the point I wanted to discuss on here, really.
I think it's a good point. I captained David Montgomery this week in this game.
So did I.
Just because he could get in the box about, you know, three or four times. I thought he could do what CMC done, just getting in the box three or four times. Didn't quite get there. I think Craig Reynolds did vulture a touchdown in the end. But, I kind of agree with what you're saying there, Mark, even though I did captain CMC the week before and cashed. This week, I just finished outside the cash places.
Hmm. What I think is interesting about that captain spot as well is it's you've got the double points, but it's not costing you any more money. So whereas if you're playing Showdown, it's 1.5 times value, is it? Whereas in this, put someone in your captain spot and they're just costing the salary, basically. Yep. So what I think is interesting is it kind of lends more to the point you just made, Matt, where you can play someone for the potential upside should someone like, you know, Jefferson, who I've no doubt was a popular captain this week. Bijan Robinson was probably another popular captain. He didn't really have the week people were expecting. You play someone like Montgomery. I know Montgomery didn't massively go off, but it could have been a week, you know, like the previous week where he had 3 touchdowns. So if something like that happens, you could still have put, say, someone like Bijan Robinson or Justin Jefferson in your lineup because it's not actually altering your budget anywhere, but you've targeted a ceiling of someone who probably 99% of the field aren't going to play in the captain spot.
Mm. So, and they don't have to. They don't have to get a ceiling score. They're enabling you to pick a different type of lineup. So if your players do well, you're competing against less other similar lineups. Yeah. But you're going to have to accept that on the week where Tyreek Hill, you know, gets his 50 points, you'll do well to cash. But in the long run, you win more money, I suspect. But, you know, this is early days with this sort of format, isn't it? So we'll see. But that was it. I think my little grain theory brain's been working overtime on this one. I haven't really worked out exactly the best option yet.
Interesting team.
This show's interesting. Because it's kind of like basically philosophical strategies for how to play this, not necessarily just like an individual week. Here's what to do this specific week. It's here's how to play this game. Here are different ways of thinking about it from a long-term perspective that it isn't just all about this Sunday necessarily. It's kind of a more sustainable long-term strategy. And I find that a really interesting approach, and it's why the podcast is useful.
Love that, Ben. Love that.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
I think we'll finish on that note. We've inflated all of our egos because we've well overrun, and I also want to build an NHL lineup, and I've literally got 20 minutes to do it. So, Ben, it's been an absolute blast having you on.
Amazing.
I have the book.
Yes.
I've read the foreword. I've read the intro. I haven't got any further, but it has been my daughter's birthday today. However, enjoyed it so far. Mike Carlson's bit that he wrote was really good. I wasn't even following Mike Carlson, but I am now. It has been a blast having you on, Ben. Where can the listeners find you? Where can they find your book, more importantly?
They can find my book in most online book retailers, so Amazon, WH Smith, Waterstones, bookshop.org. What I would say is, no matter where you buy it, if you're going to leave a review, and please, please do a review. It's absolutely massive for all authors if you leave a review, but especially on Amazon. Like, there is nothing that does more for a book's visibility than having a good number of reviews on Amazon. So I'm in the 40s now, which is really great. I just want to keep going, because the more reviews you've got, it means that when people are searching for other American football books, all of a sudden they'll be presented with one about UK NFL fans. And there'll be UK NFL fans who don't listen to these podcasts, but might be going to buy like a book like Playmakers, and it'll show them this as well. And they might be like, oh, okay, that's intriguing. It's about me. So you can find it in all those places, but please review on Amazon. It would mean a lot to me. You can find me mainly on Twitter. I'm not calling it X. I'm sorry.
We call it the Twitter on here, Ben.
Well, that can firmly get behind. same as the socials. So you'll find me at Tweets from Ben. And that's part of the reason I'm never going to call it X, because otherwise it's just at Posts from Ben. But it's at Tweets from Ben. I don't really do a lot on Instagram. I really probably should, because if I'm really going to be the Benfluencer, I probably need to do more on Instagram. There you can find me at Ben Isaacs. Just make sure you spell Ben Isaacs correctly, because I went to the Union Jack's foundation launch at the top of the cheese grater in London the other day, which was pretty swish. It was very nice getting there. But they're looking for my name on the list. They're like, oh, we can't find it. And then someone else is like, oh, no, there it is. And the woman says to me, oh, it's ISS. I'm like, no, I think I know how to spell my name. It might be wrong on there. But trust me, it's ISSAACS. So, yeah, if you are going to look for me on Instagram, that's how you spell it, ISSAACS, at Ben Isaacs. But, yeah, it's mostly on the Twitter, at Tweets from Ben.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, Ben. It has been an absolute blast having you on. I've really enjoyed myself. I'm sure you guys have as well. At Nick of Wigan, Mark
at _ Smurf,
and Jack
at Jack Humphrey DFS.
Excellent. That is a wrap. Best of luck again this weekend. Gamble responsibly, as always. And guess that's it. We will see you next Tuesday.